it's not my job to be permanently following markets and trying to work out what's going to happen next, as if I could do some sort of Jedi mind trick and get the returns that everybody wants.
This is Andy Hart, and you're listening to the Maven Money Podcast. Welcome, wealth builders and shakers. Sit tight, buckle up, as I, the Maven Advisor, take you on a financial journey, ensuring you behave your way to wealth and don't misbehave your way to poverty. Hello and welcome to the latest podcast. I'm your host, Andy Hart. No short to medium term predictions and no investment market commentary. We just focus on the good stuff here. Very brief introduction this week. We're going to get cracking with the show. We're continuing the listener story segment. I'm heading to the Cotswolds today, our first big family holiday. Wish me luck. The packing is going to be very interesting. The recommendation is the new book called The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. It's come out this week. He's a very famous writer. I think I've spoken about it on the podcast, but I think it was pre-ordered before. Get this book and read it. It's quite a short book. It's only about 6 hours on Audible. So he's taken an incredibly complicated subject and made it really, really simple. This, I believe, may be a seminal book. I've not gone through it yet. I'll be going through it definitely this week. So hopefully by next week, I can maybe comment on it. I'm hoping it's going to be a cracker. I'm going out on a limb and believing it will be. So let's hope you enjoy that. Next up is a review from Ollie H46, left on November 2019. Insightful and eye-opening 5 stars. As a budding financial planner who has recently passed the diploma, this podcast has helped me realize the skills I need to adopt in order to be a success in this industry. I've learned so much from this podcast already and can't wait to listen to the episodes that follow. A never-ending learning curve, a top podcast, and couldn't rate it more highly. I hope to be at one of your home conferences in London. That is, unless you host one up north. Talking of home conferences, South Africa was on this Tuesday. However, it's actually today. I'm recording this intro on Tuesday, so I'm actually live hosting the event at the moment and just taking a small slice out of my day to record this introduction for yourselves. Onwards to this week's show. This week's show is a listener story segment. He is a professional. He's called Chris Emmett. His business is called EBG International. And we're talking about the somewhat slightly dull offshore investment financial advice market. But I believe it's going to be good for most people listening. Certainly just open up your mind to this unique market that is sort of uniquely British. And as I say, Chris is a listener of the show. He actually lives in Chile in Latin America, and he found the show just randomly online like most people do. And weirdly, he lives sort of around the corner to me, or his parents do when he's back in the UK. That's it. Any recommendations, please do reach out to him at mavenadvisor.com, and please do leave a review and rate. And that's it. Onwards to this show, I give you listener stories, Chris Emmett. Chris Emmett, offshore financial advisor. Welcome to the Maven Money Podcast. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Good, good. This is a bit of a social distance interview. We are socially distancing in my office in Hatchend in the Layer. This is going to be a bit of a listener story, but also you're a practicing financial advisor and you're based in Chile, Santiago. We've got quite a few things to talk about, but today is going to be focused on offshore financial advice, which is not exactly something people come across every day of the week, but you might know someone who might be looking for that sort of advice, or sometime in your life you also might be looking for that sort of advice. So welcome, my friend. Yeah, we're in a slightly rainy Hatchend, slightly rainy Pinner, northwest London, not your usual haunt.
Yeah, I didn't quite bring the weather with me, but I've been living over in Chile for the last 12-13 years, but obviously originally from Hatchend.
Originally from Hatchend. So one of the questions we're going to get onto is, how did you find the podcast? Because we actually went to the same school, didn't we?
Same high school. Same high school, a couple of years apart, a few mutual friends and a rough memory of each other, very loosely. But I found the podcast through the same source that a lot of people probably was Pete Matthew. And then you came on and there was reference of Pinner or Northwest London, and the voice sounded a bit like my neck of the woods, so I had a little look and I realised there was a guy from around the corner with a few mates, and you've been listening ever since.
You're probably similar to me, and you can spot a sort of Harrow twang. It's like, that girl's from Harrow, that guy's from Harrow. I don't know why, but they are.
There's something about it. When you're overseas, it's quite often, are you a Cockney? or if they're not British or Australian, are you an Australian? Strangely enough, but yeah, there was something in there, so I followed it through, and it's been a good source of inspiration, actually. You're like a curator of common sense, I'd say, and it helps distill some of the mixed messages out there. And put a few clients onto the podcast as well when I need a bit of backup on making some good points.
I like it. Curator of common sense, which is, you're right, not so common. You're a financial advisor, you set up your own business, EBG International, and as I say, you focus on the offshore market, which has not got a very good reputation. Just on that, whenever I'm abroad in an expat hotspot, let's say the Middle East, for example, I used to years ago say I'm a financial advisor in conversation, and then they quickly wanted to sort of get away from me. So then I have to start saying I'm in technology, and then they hang around for a bit. So yeah, let's just get into that. Let's get into the meat of that. So it does have a bit of a bad reputation. So just to set the scene, when you are working abroad as an expat, let's say the Middle East, Latin America, Australia, some other jurisdictions around the world, and you're a UK expat, which means you're originally from the UK, you are somewhat targeted by offshore financial advice companies to do various things with your existing UK assets and any potential new assets that you're going to create. So, yeah, over to you, mate, to explain the offshore market in a simple sort of way for end consumers.
Yeah, I think when it comes to British expats, there's definitely that cohort of people out there that clearly call themselves financial planners, but they're really product marketeers, I would say.
Yeah.
And you'll find gatherings in a lot of the big hotspots, places like Dubai, Singapore, Hong Kong. And I think that comes out the back of there being a big financial industry in the UK, which has slowly raised its standards.
Yep.
And people going overseas to warmer climes to find new ways of making an income. So, yeah, the UK expat does tend to get targeted quite a lot. Quite often a company with a nice sort of London City sounding name to give it a veneer of professional backing.
Yeah, the usual marketing guff.
Yeah, and it really is that, starting with a product without really taking into account the individual, I'd say. So a lot of people have had those experiences and it's not always been positive.
So the bad apples we kicked out have sort of reincarnated themselves in the offshore market, which must be tough for you, who's, let's say, one of the good guys who are trying to do, you know, the best by clients, you know, lead with a plan rather than a product. But yeah, that's
yeah. I'd say the industry's got that sort of tarnished side to it. I think things are improving. There's more companies like ours out there that are looking to do things the right way.
Yeah.
Lead with the client's best interest at mind, as opposed to the product that's in their briefcase.
Yeah.
That they need to sell. So yeah, really, I think anybody that's in the offshore space, just take a bit of time to work out who you're speaking to. There are going to be good guys out there. I'd say a good tip would be make sure they've started by understanding you, not leading with a product, not leading with a complicated sounding account.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's a bit like being a doctor, isn't it? If you went to the doctor, you walked through the door and he prescribed you some medicine before he asked you what was wrong with you, then you'd run a mile. So
yeah, and then maybe he said, "Oh, sorry."
Radar.
And then he said, "Oh, sorry. Tell me what's wrong with you."
Yeah,
I forgot.
Exactly.
Tell me what's wrong with you.
So it's just use your filter. Just stop and think.
The other issue with this market is people are transient. So people go to Dubai with big plans of staying there forever. I've emigrated and they're back 3 years later. That's the challenge, isn't it? I mean, for example, I take on a client here, I say, look, I'm here to help you for the next, few decades. And I'm genuine about that. I'm 11 years into advising clients and I'll be 20 years, 30 years, et cetera, I'm always going to be around. Whereas when people are flying in and out, fast money, living the fast life, it's a bit of a trickier situation, isn't it? With calm, cautious, long-term financial planning. So yeah, how do you see that panning out?
Yeah, I think it's important to try and distinguish between a short-term expat and somebody who's probably going to have a fairly peripatetic life pattern, somebody who's going to work around the world in a lot of different places. They're two different profiles, I think.
And
in a lot of places, if somebody's going to be away for 3 years, like you say, fast money, good earnings, quite often it's younger guys that are going to be jumping the career ladder by taking a more senior position overseas than coming home. I think you just need to think carefully about long-term decisions based around very short-term life stages. If you're British, for example, and you're only going to be away for a couple of years, you're going to come home to an employer-matched pension and a big ISA allowance for you and partner. So don't necessarily make very long-term commitments and decisions based on what's probably going to be a transient stage of your life.
No, good call. I can imagine it being hard, though. Let's say if I was a financial illiterate and I just rocked up to Singapore tomorrow and earning some fast cash and someone rocked up and said, here's a good solution for your tax-free money, I'd probably just say, yeah, it seems to make sense. So I can see the sort of challenge there. Now we're going to get into the more standard listener story questions. So first up, what have you changed your mind about money, investing and finance?
Yeah, very broad topic, and in this industry, we're all always evolving, I'd say. But I think probably the most important thing that I've realised is that it's not my job to be permanently following markets and trying to work out what's going to happen next, as if I could do some sort of Jedi mind trick and get the returns that everybody wants. So I think that's been an important one. And the other thing around that, I suppose, is not trying to protect clients from volatility, but teach them how to understand and embrace it. Wow. I think there's a huge amount of misconception around risk and what that means. You've done some great work on that I've seen in the past around your informed risk scale.
Yeah.
Which I think is absolutely perfect. People confusing those two things. So I wished I'd been clearer and probably more authoritative with clients on that sooner, I reckon.
But again, advisors are often beating themselves up about, you know, learning something which they deem slightly later on in their career, but at least you learn it at this point. There's advisors that are 65, 70, retire, and still never really understood what on earth their job was. And in a social circle, they're seen as successful because they've earned a few quid. So yeah, don't beat yourself up about learning something later on in the game.
No, I mean, the day you stop learning is the day you die, I think. So it's good to be able to evolve over time, but I think that's a clear one. And to be honest, regulators don't always help with stuff like this. You know?
Anyway, yeah, let's move on from that one. Because it's by committee. It's like one person in the committee goes, I know exactly how risk should be explained. And then once it gets filtered through all the layers and levels, it just comes out looking like a dog's dinner.
Yeah, you know, a 30-year-old says they're conservative, so they get their pension fund stuck in a portfolio for
very travesty,
low risk investments without anybody explaining inflation.
I think there should be a law where fixed income is not allowed to be held in pension assets for anyone under the age of 50. It's global equities only, just to choose the flavour of global equities. Sign regardless of what you come out with on the bloody risk questionnaire.
Sign me up, I'm all for that, yeah.
But the listeners of this show are on their journey to becoming financial literates or already financial literates. So that's, again, what I'll be banging on about. So what do you think is the most tricky elements of personal finance? Because, you know, there's so much of it to understand, so much of it to piece together. It's not just a case of, I want to learn and understand money and off I go. The weekend later, you're rocking and rolling. It's such a deep, tricky, murky subjects here. What do you think is the most sort of tricky elements to personal finance?
I think possibly the first stage is understanding that it's personal. Everybody focuses on finance and not the personal part of it.
Great.
And a huge amount of that comes from an industry that's obviously tied the world in knots, building up complication.
Intentionally, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, we've got the magic keys to the universe. You can't understand this. You need us in your life. You retire at 65. I mean, I almost don't even use the word retirement with a lot of clients now, but there's sort of almost like this prison of expectation people have. And they've learned a lot of biases that won't help them over the years. I think the key is understanding that your life should be lived for you. You should start from there before the money, and then have to understand that there's no silver bullet to getting to the end line. Consistent good behavior, forming good habits, and doing it for you, as opposed to following the propaganda, I suppose, which you've been shown over your lifetime.
I think that is a key thing. It is personal finance. Sometimes I've done a lot of like talks for younger people. Let's call them millennials. Let's put them in a box, whatever. And obviously, they're just trying to make sense of the world and finance and money. And every question they have for me is like a corporate finance question.
Yeah.
And they're saying, well why don't I do this? And I say, well, no, you're talking about, complex corporate structures. What's that got to do with you and investing some money? So yeah, initially it's all about, I've got to learn personal finance and money, therefore I'm going to study companies. It's like, that is the least of your worries.
Yeah.
Personal finance is the key thing. And that's the key thing, mate. I like that.
And the strange thing is they feel that's the right way to go.
Of course.
Because of the amount of stress put on that. You know, nobody wants to look like they don't know anything. So they'll lead in with a lot of these misconceptions. So
yep.
Helping people unlearn the things that aren't helpful or useful or healthy for them, I'd say that's a big challenge.
Yeah, I've banged on about this a lot. I believe unlearning is the greatest skill anyone can have, certainly when it comes to investing. And I've said it many times before, you learn as much as you can, you then unlearn 99% of it and you're left with the essence. But there is no shortcut to get to that 1%. You've unfortunately got to learn a whole load of guff, get really good at unlearning, and then you're left with the essence. Some people can't ever do it. Next question, mate. So high level, what is your asset allocation of your personal portfolio? What's your asset allocation?
Well, me personally, I'm 41, and my unknown future will hopefully go on for quite a long time. So I'm 100% equity, as far as I'm concerned.
Which is the lowest risk asset class?
Yes, for the informed, I agree with it. I mean, with my clients, I see my job as helping them grow comfortable with that as a concept. And it's an ongoing journey. So yes, if somebody's going to panic with some volatility and engage in bad behavior, we'll pander to that for a while. But my job is to sort of bring them ever closer to understanding that you invest in real assets, or yep, you have cash for the things, you know, your yes, emergencies,
yes,
your known expenses, or yep, property deposit in 18 months, okay.
Yep, house development, exactly, kids, wedding, yep, cash. The rest long term, global equities, yeah, right now.
Spread it wide, keep it cheap. I think you use the phrase the great companies of the world. I like that.
Yep.
I say to my clients, we're not going to try and pick out a few trees, we're going to buy the forest.
Yep.
Going to buy human ingenuity
and
let it run. But it's an educational job to make sure they understand volatility being different to risk around that, I think.
Definitely. Now back to some of the offshore questions. We touched upon it earlier on.
And it is improving out there. There are newer firms, a bit like ours, that are treat somebody who's very friendly, but they've got the perfect solution for you without knowing you. Then obviously be aware of that.
Bit of a red flag, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully there'll be more clarity around fees and what you're being charged. So just maybe dig into that a little bit, be comfortable there.
Yeah.
And these aren't the be-all and end-alls, but in the offshore world, double-check that the person's regulated somewhere,
at least. Somewhere on planet Earth.
Yeah, find out what the company structure is. You know, what's the backing behind this? Have a quick look at the advisor. What's their background? Have they got any qualifications? Just do a little bit of due diligence.
Who can you work with? What jurisdictions can you work? What countries can you work with? Who can you work with? What's the pool of clients that you can access?
We tend to primarily focus in Latin America.
Yeah.
We've got a license out of the Caribbean, which sort of broadly covers good standards, but the primary license we use is an EU license. So all the work we do, regardless of where it is in the world, sort of comes up to that EU compliance level.
Yeah.
And that also allows us to sort of focus on, well, not focus, but deal with people inside the EU.
Yeah.
There's some jurisdictions that have got very particular local regulation.
That you steer clear of, or you just aware of?
We steer clear of, yeah. There's things there that would make it more problematic.
But can you work with people in Hong Kong, Dubai, Singapore, Latin America? I know I've seen
that. From a financial planning point of view, yes. I think the plumbing of it, you know, recommending specific accounts, that could
funds, platforms, etc.
Yeah, there could be some sort of issues there. But at the end of the day, that's the last 5% of the conversation, isn't it? So the broader planning piece, the setting up the lifetime plan, then yeah, really anybody anywhere. And we've worked with other professionals in other jurisdictions where it's relevant to make sure that the client's getting the best advice.
But your bread and butter, where you can do everything for them, they're Latin American based. You can set up their platforms, their investment funds, their insurances, job lot, and the financial planning.
Yeah, yeah, far more sort of all the way through to executions, a lot more comfortable there. But we work on a lot of referral basis, and that can go global. Like the last three conversations I've had were France, Jakarta, and Australia this morning with referred clients that live all over the world. I think the key is bringing it back to the personal. And then if there's going to be some tinkering around the technical, just make sure you've got a trusted partner in that jurisdiction.
It does sound quite exciting. I feel a little bit boring in my little northwest London southeast bubble. Maybe I could set up a little something and travel around. And
well, there's always room at the desk next to me.
I'll be hammering those phones in Latin America.
Please excuse this brief interruption to the show. As long-time listeners know, sticking to and producing a weekly show is demanding and challenging, but it's also very fulfilling, especially hearing the impact the show is having with hundreds and even thousands of people. I was originally seeking a sponsor for the show, but I feel this may devalue the show and also restrict it. So I've decided to set up a listener-sponsored feature, so you, as my dear listeners, can become patrons of the show. If I've had an impact on your mindset, financial future, your business life, and you can afford to buy a cup of coffee without even thinking about it, you'd make a perfect patron of this show. This will be the professionals who listen to the show and also end consumers. The advice I share compounds, as everything in life does. So one idea, one thought experiment could have a huge impact on your life. If just 1% of the listeners supported the show, this would be more than enough to ensure the survival of the podcast in its current form. I still want it to be free for those who are not in a position to financially support the show at present. As supporters of the show, you'll have access to me for high-level questions. There are extra supporter tiers where you can have either a telephone conversation or face-to-face meeting each year. As this is a behavioural show, let's hope you take action and support the art that's had a positive impact in your life. I believe this is the future of content, viewer-funded and direct links to the creators. Investing better, understanding money and avoiding big mistakes must be worth a subscription to become a patron. The link to subscribe is in the show notes, but the direct link is patreon.com/mavenmoney. Patreon is spelt P-A-T-R-E-O-N. So it's patreon.com/mavenmoney. Please go and check it out. Your support means the world to me.
Just on this, again, this high charging thing, it's known for high charging and, you know, you'd sort of agree with that and it's just how it's sort of set up. And is it still smoke and mirrors that people can't really find out? But is it better to just have a something in place that's high charging than a nothing, and then hopefully the markets will do okay long term? You know, you don't want to sort of cut your nose off to spite your face as such, because if that's the only option that you have whilst abroad, if you're paying a little bit more for your life insurance, at least you bloody have it. You know, if you're paying a little bit more for your investments, at least you bloody have them. What's thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd agree with the sentiment of that, so long as it's done responsibly. Yeah, there are still sort of fairly high commission vehicles that are used out there. Smoke and mirrors funds with high management charges, things like structured notes, which generate nice commissions. But yeah, if you identify the plan for somebody, you know, you're, how old are we? late 30s, early 40s. You need to save some money for the next 10 years. Save it over here. Make it automatic. You don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Is it more expensive than if you were sat in Hatch End and you opened up an ISA? Yeah, it probably is.
Yeah, it's probably 10 times as much, but it doesn't matter.
But in 10 years' time, you've got the money there.
Yeah,
you've got
exactly.
A portfolio. So there's that, but I'd always be very mindful about the cost you're paying on underlying funds. I think we both agree behaviour is the key driver, but
yeah.
You should be paying too much. So if you see an investment advisor and he says, put your £100,000 into this account and we'll give you this very complicated, interesting sounding fund, maybe just ask, well, what's wrong with a global ETF that's going to buy me global equities? And just ask a few questions. But yeah, unfortunately, there are still people out there that will go for the commission. I think just ask them to disclose it, maybe, so that you feel comfortable.
But then the other issue here we have is the individual who's just moved abroad is doing this for the first time. It's their first rodeo. The salesman or salesperson, sales lady in front of you, this is their 100th rodeo. You know, they know how to skin this cat. You know, it's just like the Turkish rug salesman, isn't it? You can do all the preparation you can the minute you're in that. Bizarre.
And you still walk away with a rug, don't you?
And you still walk away with a rug. The locals are thinking, that guy's paid 20 times the price. You're thinking, oh, I've had a result here. I've got like 90% off the price. You know what I mean? It's a tricky situation to be in.
But it is, but I mean, some of the improvement's going to be driven by the product providers that cater to that cross-border world.
Yes.
And being more stringent with who they allow to introduce business to them. And we've seen a degree of that in the industry. Some companies reviewing and refining who they allow to represent their products.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, it's a slow improvement. And I think it's polarizing a little bit. There'll be the companies that do everything they can to stay murky.
Yep.
And those that embrace the light and sort of try and be as clean as possible. But at the end of the day, I suppose there's a degree of buyer beware.
Yeah, sure. Humans are like water, show them the line, they'll go towards it, eh? What's the worst advice you see or hear being dispensed in your world?
Well, I suppose we sort of touched on the whole idea that risk and volatility are different. So you see a lot of that and things where people have I suppose, given investments to 60-year-olds that are due to run for 20 years. But the most common one, probably for a British audience or primarily British audience out there, would be that we can do much better with your UK pension, pull that away from its long-standing roots and place it into this wonderful new thing, which quite often just massively increases charges and investment complexity. Lots of structured notes, which sound very clever, but quite often can fail. Yeah. I've seen a bit of that, not so much in Latin America, but people that have arrived there from places elsewhere in the world.
Yeah.
I think the overcomplication of simple affairs to generate commission. So filling portfolios for relatively cautious people full of fairly aggressive investments to earn good money.
Hammer that point home, I've also seen the result of UK pensions being ripped out of the UK and placed in offshore locations, usually when they come back to the UK and then we can't unravel it. So Chris just mentioned that and he sort of brushed past that, but it's a massively important point. So if you are ever listening to this and you are in an expat hotspot and something's been presented to you that looks too good to be true and it's in relation to a bloody good UK pension that you have, if there's only one thing you take away from this, then I pretty much say ideally don't do it. You'll be charged heavily on every single step of the transaction and you won't really know what the hell's going on. And it might even cause you a massive tax issue when you try to repatriate that or bring that back to the UK at a later point. So that's a massively important point that Chris has just been brought up there. That's why this market is such a hot market, because pension values are so high. And when people leave the UK, they have hundreds of thousands stroke millions in pensions that unscrupulous companies can have access to. So again, I'm not poo-pooing the whole market, and there'll be some good apples amongst there. But you know, as a general rule of thumb, I would recommend to sort of avoid that. Would you echo those words, Chris? Anything else?
Yeah, I would. I think more recently, more of the transfer work has been sort of done inside of the UK. So a lot of that overseas transfer stuff slowed down and people will transfer inside the UK to a SIP potentially. But just make sure if you're going to do it that the process is robust. There's really good UK domiciled advice as part of the process. It's not just being given to you by a chap in a sort of finance centre over in the Middle East or wherever it may be. And if in doubt, second opinion. Get on the phone to ask some of your mates, ask people you trust. Have you got an advisor in the UK? Just run the recommendation past them. Pay a couple of pounds for a second opinion. Does this make sense to you?
But the general rule of thumb is I would avoid it. There's nothing wrong with UK pensions. They're bloody brilliant if you understand them. So trying to look for some weird and wacky, more fire elsewhere is probably going to cause you more problems than good. Some quick fire questions, mate. What one money tip would you give to a group of children?
It's maybe more than one. We're actually working on some sort of educational stuff at the moment for kids with a few other professionals. But I think giving them a sensible relationship with money, trying to make them have a healthy understanding that it's just a tool. And if you use it the right way, then you're going to go well. So simple stuff around risk and volatility, compounding, inflation, and there's some fairly simple fun ways you can do that that sort of link into Singaporean maths teaching philosophy. But I think those would be the key things, like just the mindset, try and make it healthy.
Interesting. Which I'm gonna have to
it's coming your way soon,
the kids. I'm looking for some fun and interesting ways to get them to understand inflation and compounding, that's for sure. Delayed gratification is also going to be something high on my list. What do you wish you had learned sooner about money and why?
Sooner about money, I think that it's a thing that is almost static. It's just a concept. What can influence it is behaviour. I'm a big cricket fan, and there's a chap called Richie Benno who used to say, captaincy is 90% luck and 10% skill. Just don't try it without the 10%. I wish I knew that in our industry, the 90% was the human element, and that, you know, we're managing humans. I've got over 20 years of compound wisdom now, but that was the biggest tick over is truly understanding that.
It's a people business, not a money business, eh?
It really is. I mean, you could read two books on personal finance and probably know 95% of the basics.
Yes,
but it doesn't mean you're going to engage in them all the time.
And stick to the plan and realise how important sticking to the plan is.
Yeah, this time it's different. I mean, luckily we do a lot of work with our clients around this, so we didn't get any real grief over the recent volatility we've had over COVID, but I'm sure there was a lot of people out there screaming that this time it's different and probably engaging in some fairly damaging behaviour.
And a lot of those are professionals as well, because they don't realise what the hell's going on either. I was speaking to an advisor about that this morning. She was saying all of her clients did really well. Only one of them didn't listen to her. The interesting thing that she said, all of my clients listened to me. And again, that's what I look for in my clients. I look for organised, motivated, nice people that will listen to me. The key thing there is that will listen to me. And she led with that. She said, all of my clients listened to me, Andy, apart from one. And the reason why we were talking about it is we're talking about potentially the second wave. And if the clients have got through the first wave without making any bloody mistakes to their investment portfolios and acting where they shouldn't be acting, the second wave is going to be a bloody walk in the park. It's like, look, we've been here before. Like, please do not come to my door. You know what I'm going to say? I said it in the real, you know, the real uncertainty, the real unknown, you know, March 2020. If we get a second peak in bloody March 2021, move on. We know the stock market always recovers. Absolutely. You know, all declines are temporary.
It's a good tip for the advisors that are listening as well. You don't have to take on every client. That client that wants to be measured by the performance of his portfolio and is constantly watching the market, you can never win with that sort of person, because at some stage, things won't go the way they want, or a friend will say, well, I've done better than you this quarter.
Yeah, you're never going to please them.
No, so I mean, that's why we stick to lifestyle financial planning.
You know, exactly.
Make sure that it's fitting to the client first. Yep. They understand what's going on.
And the irony about some of these clients, I say, they check their portfolio daily, but they don't increase their contributions annually.
Yeah.
There's some clients I've known over the years that have looked at their portfolio daily, and when I sit down and say, right, we need to increase the contributions, no, I think I'm paying enough, Andy. I mean, you couldn't make it up how bad that is. Every single day, they are checking their investment performance, which is outside of their control, and at least annually, something within their control they don't do.
I agree with that. The whole concept as well, advisors saying, I will send you monthly statements or quarterly statements. No.
I don't even like annual.
Yeah.
Annual are horrendous. I heard an advisor once, he said, we review our equity performance every decade. I just thought, like, freaking brilliant. I don't know why they were reviewing their fixed income performance annually. But annual is just an arbitrary point.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean anything.
I fully agree. Do equities know that it's the end of December?
Yeah. Calendar year. Anyway, moving on from that. Right, final quick fire questions, my friend. Is it about working hard or smart?
I'd say this age has taught us that smart comes first, and then if you can put some elbow grease behind it, then you're going to get there.
Again, quite interesting speaking to a mate this morning. He said, Andy, how busy you've been, you know, with the kids and all that. And I said, actually, I've been all right. You know, I've been working hard. And he was like, he was pushing me to work out how many hours I spent. I said, Dex, I think for a living. I'm not building roads. Like, yeah, I've been busy, but I haven't been, as I say, erecting houses. You know, he's a very manual profession. And I was like, Dex, I think for a living. So, you know, I'm busy with the kids, but I'm still trying to use my brain.
I might know the guy you're talking about.
You might know the guy I'm talking about. I think you do. Okay, final. Lucky or good?
I would go good. And then the luck is like the secret sprinkles that go on top. So long as you're working smart, so long as you're doing the right things, then luck will probably come your way.
And I think, as you mentioned, the Richie Benno quote earlier on, rich or wealthy?
I'd have to say wealthy on that one. Rich implies sort of temporary ability to spray money about, whereas wealth gives me a feeling of contentment.
What do they say? Rich screams, wealth whispers. Which you would definitely, I mean, yeah, there's all this mystical, oh, he's a millionaire, they're a millionaire. It's like, you've just walked past one, they've left my office. You wouldn't now. You wouldn't know in a million years.
Living in Latin America, I've met lots of rich people that have vast amounts of income coming in, and they spend a lot of money. And I question if many of them are going to be long-term wealthy.
Yeah, to hold on to the money, which is the challenge. Yeah. That is the chat over, my friend. That was superb. As I say, Chris's business is called EBG International, ebginternational.com. What's your email, Chris? I'm going to publicly put it out there if anyone needs to
Marvellous. It would be C. Emmett, which is Echo Mike Oscar Tango Tango at ebginternational.com.
So C for your name, Chris. C. Emmett, all one word, at ebginternational.com.
Yeah. If anybody's got any questions, they can always reach out via the website. We should be able to get back to you fairly quickly.
And you're also on LinkedIn, aren't you, my friend?
LinkedIn, yes. still resisting the modern world of Instagram and Twitter, but I'm going to get dragged kicking and screaming there sooner or later, I suppose.
Just final point, you are a bit of a super cricket fan, aren't you? So yeah, what do the cricket fans who are listening to this need to know about you and cricket?
I've captained Chile for about 5 years, but that sounds more impressive than it probably is. I've played a couple of local games here since I've been back and not
sorry,
quite.
Captain of Chile the country or captain of yeah. Chile the expat
no,
team?
No, Chile the country.
So you're an international captain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, true. But if recent form in the Hertfordshire Cricket League is anything to go by, well, I'm not being exactly a walking wicket. I'm not exactly Donald Bradman either, so...
Interesting.
There you go.
Right, so, and you're back here because of lockdown in Chile and you've decided to come back and see your parents. Obviously a great time to spend time with your parents. You brought your Chilean wife over and your daughter.
That's right.
And you'll be heading back, I think, around...
probably mid-September.
Time?
Yeah, the airline keeps cancelling, but we'll plan to be back there for sort of...
And also, what a crazy world that, you know, you're in the personal finance space, financial services, so am I... Went to the same school, didn't really know each other. And then 20 years later, I put out a random podcast. I'm on someone else's show. You listen in Chile. You piece it all together. And then you reach out and we, you know, go for a coffee. Again, compliments to the modern world, how connected it is. So it's
must be something in the water around here because two blokes about the same age talking the same sort of sense about a complicated subject. who'd have thought it?
I got contact by another listener of the show who also went to Hatchin. I think he's 10 years younger than us. Again, it's just a funny old world, hey? Thanks a lot for your time, mate. All good. I'll speak to you soon.
Andy. Keep up the good work, mate.